Welcome to Get Connected with Nina Del Rio, a weekly conversation about fitness, health, and happenings in our community on 106.7 Light FM.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us on Get Connected. What would you do if your pet had cancer? What kind of treatment would you choose, and what are the options? Our guest today is Dr. Joshua Lakowitz, veterinary oncologist with Blue Pearl Veterinary Partners on the Upper West Side, so he's going to answer those questions for us. And he's also recently established the Joshua Lewis Animal Cancer Foundation to provide financial assistance to families who have a pet with cancer, and we'll find more about that too. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
So let me give the websites really quick, so while we're talking, if anybody wants to go online, your veterinary clinic is BluePearlVet.com. That's it. It's 55th and 9th Avenue. Mm-hmm. And the charity is joshualewis.org.
Correct.
Okay.
And Lewis is always spelled, in my world, L-O-U-I-S, because that can, obviously, there's multiple spellings of it. So I spell it L-O-U-I-S.
Okay, very good. That helps us out. So, first of all, I think people sometimes don't even or aren't aware that a pet can get cancer and that there's actually treatment for cancer to start with.
That's true. Actually, a lot of my clients come in and they don't realize that the same processes that happen in their pet can actually be the same things that happen in a human as well, too. And therefore, the diagnostics and the treatments are actually very similar, if not the same in most cases. Some people don't even know that oncologists exist, and so it's a good thing for people to know that if your animal is diagnosed with cancer, we're out there to help.
There's a specialist beyond just your regular doctor.
Correct.
So, in a conversation about pets and cancer treatment, there's always a couple of topics that really come up. So let's talk about the first one about ethics.
Okay.
People often wonder, you know, for an animal who doesn't understand what's going on, and mm-hmm. cancer treatment for humans can be very, very difficult to go through. Mm-hmm. For a pet who isn't aware of what the issue is, what do you know about how an animal feels during treatment and how they react to chemotherapy?
Well, I really honestly rely on the owners more than anything else, because the owners are taking care of their pet who is part of their family, and I rely on them to let me know how they're doing. And most of us, if we have pets, we have a sense of what is acceptable or unacceptable to them in terms of their quality of life. The primary philosophy behind veterinary oncology, in contrast to human oncology, is that we're really trying to treat and attempt to make sure that the animal has a good quality of life. It may be difficult in all cases, or some cases, I should say, it may be difficult to actually cure a pet with cancer, but we may be able to provide them with a good quality of life and some comfortable time. And so since our philosophy is a little bit different from that when what we do in human oncology, the treatments are going to be different in terms of how aggressively we treat, and therefore they're actually going to be tolerated much better than they actually are in humans.
So we're not necessarily trying to put them in remission or eradicate the cancer.
We do want to get them in remission. If at all possible, we definitely want to get them in remission, but not at the expense of them having a poor quality of life going through that. And the good thing is, similar to how a pet handles going through surgery or going through other medical procedures, they're up and walking around the next day. They're waking up from anesthesia wanting to eat. I've only had minor procedures myself, but I know it can take days. Maybe I'm a little bit of a baby, but a headache can debilitate me for a few hours. But animals are very different in how they experience and relate to the pain. So we can't always use how we would feel with it. They're going to be very different in that regard.
They also, though, do they not sort of, they can tolerate a lot more in a sense.
Exactly. Their pain levels or their tolerance is much different than what we have in humans.
When is an animal too old for treatment?
Never. Age is not a disease. That being said, if there are other types of diseases or processes or something that comes along with an animal's age, like heart failure or kidney failure, that may actually influence how I can treat an animal's cancer. So if I have to look at other health factors that come with age, that's the only time the age will really influence how I treat an animal with cancer.
As the same it would for a human, perhaps.
Sure, absolutely.
How does temperament help determine whether we should proceed with treatment or what treatment you use?
That's a great question. I don't know if I've ever had that asked to me before. But temperament is one of the things where animals are definitely going to be somewhat, well, every animal is different, so I shouldn't use any blanket statements. I have a cat who's a very gentle being at home, but I take him to the doctor's office and he is the polar opposite. So I certainly understand how it can be a stressful situation, not only for the pet, but for the owner as well, too. most of the animals, once they come in for their routine visit, they get used to the place, they get used to the sights and the smells. Most of them adapt very easily. And for the patients on the oncology service, if they come in on sometimes a week basis, a once a week or a weekly basis, they're actually coming in so often, they develop a bond with our technicians. They're excited to see them. A lot of times, they don't even look back at their owners. Their leash is in the hand of the technician. They're running downstairs to the treatment area, and they really don't mind at all. They do have to adapt and get used to it, but generally speaking, temperament is not a major issue or obstacle in terms of how we can treat them with oncology. We do have some cats that can be a little bit testy and be challenging for the technicians, but we always seem to manage and make do, and fortunately, that's few and far between.
These might be cats that are testy no matter what's going
that's
on.
That's true. That's true. Although, again, I shouldn't say that because my own cat being a little bit testy in the hospital, I can truly say that he's a peach at home.
So the other conversation that generally comes up when we talk about treating pets for cancer or major surgery, that sort of thing, is mm-hmm. the cost.
Right.
How much does chemotherapy or cancer treatment cost?
Well, chemotherapy, I should start by saying there's three basic conventional treatment modalities that we use for cancer therapy. One would be surgery, the second would be radiation therapy, and the third would be chemotherapy. There's also ancillary types of treatments that could be done as well. You have certain types of supplements that can come into play. You have certain types of basic anti-inflammatories that come into play. But if you think about the three cornerstones of treatment, that would be surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. Now, the cost of the procedures is going to vary based on the type of cancer we're treating. It's going to vary if we need to use any or all of those types of treatments versus just one. And it's going to vary, in most cases, on the size of the animal as well. So if we're dealing with just surgery, a surgery can run from a few hundred dollars to several thousands of dollars, especially if we are dealing with a case where we have, for instance, a tumor that requires a CT scan or an MRI prior to the surgery itself. That's going to add on a couple thousand couple thousand dollars worth of diagnostic information just to get to the point where we have surgery. So from a few hundred to several thousand, there's a very large range. And again, it just depends on the situation that we're dealing with, the type of cancer, what we're operating on, the patient itself. Chemotherapy also is going to have a very large range of costs associated with it. It can range from a couple thousand dollars to several thousands of dollars, just depending on how much chemotherapy we need and for how long. It's usually a treatment by treatment. So some chemos may cost a nominal amount, and they may not be exorbitant at all. But that's all relative to an individual's comfort level, because for some, spending $50 could be a lot. For some, spending $500 could be a lot. And for some, $5,000 may not be much at all. So it really depends on an individual situation. But to really answer your question, and sorry for rambling, the cost can vary from a few hundred to several thousands of dollars. And the more therapy we have to do, the more that it's going to add up.
We're speaking with Dr. Joshua Lakowitz of Blue Pearl Veterinary Partners. The website is bluepearlvet.com, and your charitable website is joshualewis.org. We're going to get to that in just a second on 106.7 Light FM. I'm Nina Del Rio, and you're listening to Get Connected. So with the cost, one of the things you have done is established the Joshua Lewis Animal Cancer Foundation, and this is to help people who may have financial hardship treating their pets. Can you tell Correct. Us, give us an overview?
Absolutely. So the Joshua Lewis Animal Cancer Foundation was established in 2011. We're currently in our fundraising stage, and what the foundation does is raise money to help those in financial need who would otherwise not be able to treat the pet's cancer. So obviously, again, the cost of cancer therapy can become very exorbitant in some cases and sometimes prohibitive. I actually have a dog that I adopted, and one of the reasons the owners were not able to take care of him is because they could not afford the cancer therapy itself. So when I developed, or when we decided to launch the foundation, it was really to find that group of people or that individuals or those families where they have an animal that has cancer. We have the tools on this, the medicine side of things, and we have the ability to help, but to really bridge the gap or the disconnect between not being able to afford it and actually being able to do it. The fundraising efforts we use, we're just launching this year, but the possibilities are endless. Currently, the first fundraiser that we have is the Amazing Love piano solo CD. So I'm a singer-songwriter, and I started playing piano at a young age, and I wanted this to be my contribution to the foundation, my music. I wanted it to be more than just something people could turn on and listen to. My music is inspired by what I do as an oncologist, what I do as a veterinarian, or who I am as a person. And so to use the melodies that I create when I go home and de-stress at the end of the day and sit down at the piano and have these songs actually give back in a different way, that was really what we wanted to do with the foundation, is be able to use this creative art form to be able to then go back, raise money through music sales, and there will be other fundraising efforts as well. And we'll be able to put all that money and have people apply to it. If they need assistance, they may be eligible for the assistance, and then they can use that money towards the treatment of cancer therapy.
And when can people start applying?
Well, that's a good question. We aim to have the applications being accepted in early 2012. It depends on how aggressive we are in our fundraising efforts and how successful we can be to build a little bit of a cushion so we can start to actually have the money. So there's really no date. What I would say is, if you're interested, continue to check the website or give us a call, send us an email, because we'll be able to keep you updated on when we're actually at that point. Hopefully it's going to be much sooner rather than later.
And in the meantime, you can actually participate by buying the CD and making your contribution that way.
You can make a contribution online by just going and donating money. You can purchase the songs on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and type in Joshua Lewis, that CD will come up. It's called Amazing Love, and that's the title track from the 11-song CD. You can actually buy the physical CD, which is actually really cool, and I'll even autograph it if you want an autograph from Joshua Lewis. You can have that on there as well. So you can buy the physical CD. You can buy the music on the CD through iTunes or any of the other internet websites, and that would be a way that you could make a contribution, because 100% of the proceeds from the CD go directly to the foundation. So this is a total nonprofit project that we've worked on here. And so it's something I'm very proud to be able to share with people, again, not only from what they can hear, but from what they can actually do by buying the music.
It's a very novel way to do it, and the music is lovely. And the website is joshualewis.org, L-O-U-I-S. So we're sure we have the right Lewis on
that.
So because, you know, another question related to finance, by the way, do your patients typically have pet insurance?
That's a great question. And I would say the minority of the patients actually, or the clients, have insurance for the patients. If I had to put a ballpark, I would say roughly 15 to 20% of the owners have insurance for their pets.
And that would cover, what's a typical, do you even know anything about how much pet insurance covers?
It all depends on the plan. Just like with human health insurances, there's various plans, and there's different companies that are out there as well. And they can actually have the different types of tiers and structures of what you would want to purchase on a, you know, to invest in. So in some cases, they pay for 10% of the treatment. Some cases, they pay up to 90%. 90% has been the maximum that I've seen. And that goes towards both diagnostics as well as treatment. So it makes it affordable in some cases where it otherwise may not be.
For all the reasons it might be difficult to decide to go ahead and proceed with cancer treatment, do you know the percentage of pets that are diagnosed that actually their owners proceed with treatment?
Well, I'm only seeing the patients that are referred to me by their local veterinarian. So the patients that come to see me, the majority are going to go the next step and start therapy. If it's something that's within their means, it's something they are interested in doing, and something that we feel medically they have a good prognosis. So I would say roughly 85% of the patients that at least make it in to see me or one of my fellow oncologists are going to go forward with the cancer treatment.
Dr. Lakowitz, what kind of a role does an owner have in treatment at home? What are they doing at home?
They honestly are the most key players in all of this. My job is easy, and I'm going to start by saying that. My job is easy, and having an animal that actually has cancer and being on the other side of the table, if you will, it certainly can be very daunting. It can be frustrating. It's obviously, there's a lot of emotional toll that it will take on an owner and individual. So they have to be the support system. They have to be the one that can come back and forth, be the strong one that can come in and actually follow through with the diagnostics, the testing, the treatment, everything that's involved with it. They also have to do all the at-home care and the monitoring. And as I said earlier, I really rely on owners to tell me how their animal is doing and to really communicate with their animal in a way that only they know how to do, because again, it's part part of their family. So having to be the parent, having to be the support system, having to be the driver in the taxi cab and getting them back and forth, having to be the one that's, you know, financing it, it's a lot for them to take in. And so I would really say I give a huge kudos to all the clients out there that go forward with it. It certainly can be one of the can be a situation where it may not be the most fun thing to have to go through, mm-hmm. but seeing the smiles on the faces and the appreciation, the gratitude, I know we're doing it for the right reasons, and I know that genuinely these owners are really doing a great job in taking care of their pets, and without them, I wouldn't be able to do what I do.
We're speaking with Dr. Joshua Lewis Lakowitz, veterinary oncologist with Blue Pearl Veterinary Partners. Their website is bluepearlvet.com, and you're listening to Get Connected on 106.7 Light FM. I'm Nina Del Rio. So it's common knowledge, I think, that different breeds of dogs or cats are prone to different illnesses or diseases.
That's true.
As an oncologist, are there breeds that you treat more often than others?
Well, I would say that the majority of patients we see are mixed breeds, whether it's a dog or a cat. And that might just be because there are more mixed breeds that are owned and not as many mm-hmm. that actually have a purebred animal. When I was practicing in New Jersey, we had homes that had yards, so we used to see a lot of larger breed dogs mm-hmm. than we see here in Manhattan or in the boroughs of New York City. So it's hard to really pinpoint exactly which type of breed we would see more than others. I would say when I was in New Jersey, Golden Retrievers were one of our most common breeds. However, Golden Retrievers are a very common breed. They're a great breed of dog to own. So I'm not certain that it's actually because they develop cancer more easily than a mixed breed dog, or if they actually just have, they're more populous in the, by owners. So in a situation like that, it's really hard to say. And what I can say from my personal experience, having owned 4 or 5 animals now, I've always had mixed breed dogs. Actually, I adopted a Pekingese from an owner that mm-hmm. couldn't take care of the treatment of the cancer. So I do have a purebred dog now. But even the mixed breed dogs that I've had, some of them have still had cancer. And if you look at the statistics overall, 50% of animals over the age of 8 to 10 years old actually are going to be diagnosed with some form of cancer, whether it's an operable tumor that you can treat, it's just a malignant tumor that can come off and they can, you know, have a high chance of cure, or if it's something that's more aggressive that requires chemotherapy. But that statistic is, in my opinion, astounding to know that over half of the animals out there are going to be diagnosed with some form of malignancy. So regardless of the type of the patient or the breed that we're seeing, we see way too much cancer.
Is there any idea as to why they develop cancer? The diet, like that?
What we know is that cancer is a genetic disease, and cancer starts by an individual's genetic makeup and who they are. And there are certain types of factors that may be that have been proven to be a triggering factor to developing cancer. Most cases, we actually cannot get to the root of the problem or know why it is. And if you look at the statistics, they've looked at populations of animals that have already passed. And so you start to develop some links and things along those lines. But it doesn't actually tell you for an individual, if you come in, what that factor was that allowed them to develop cancer more easily. There are breed dispositions, getting back to your initial question, that we do see cancer, certain forms of cancer. For instance, we see a high incidence of bladder cancer in Scottish Terriers. That's fairly common. There are certain cat breeds that will develop certain forms of lymphoma. So that's more common. And in terms of environmental factors, everything in the environment, from things we can't prevent or can't see, like petroleums, different types of chemicals, different types of infectious agents that we may not know that they actually have because they're never clinical or symptomatic for it, all of those different types of factors or triggering agents have been associated with cancer and various forms of cancer.
Do different breeds react to therapy in different ways or have a different survival rate?
Not usually. Most of the animals actually do very well. There are a few exceptions to that rule. There are certain breeds of dogs like collies and other types of herding breeds where they have certain genetic mutations, or you have to be really cautious with the chemotherapy because they're more sensitive to it. Mm. There are going to be other breeds of dogs and cats that may be prone to hair coat changes, which is actually not a common thing we see at all. They don't lose their hair like people, but there are certain breeds like poodles, Bichons, and other types of dogs and that actually have a hair coat that grows, and we can give them chemotherapy and they will lose their hair. But most cases that come in, if you have a terrier breed, you'll have very minimal, if any, hair loss. If you have a Labrador, if you have a typical domestic short hair cat, they're going to have very few to any short to very few to no hair coat changes.
Okay. And other side effects, vomiting, nausea, all that kind of stuff?
So when I tell people about chemotherapy in one regard is fairly primitive. You're basically treating actively dividing cells. Cancer cells are active, and they're overactive. So they're going to be the target population of cells that we want to treat. But also the good cells in the body that are active, and those are going to be the ones that can be prone to having the side effects from chemotherapy, would be intestinal cells or cells within the GI tract, the gastrointestinal tract, which could lead to things like vomiting, nausea, diarrhea. We can also see immunosuppression because the white cell count can drop, and that can lead to them being tired or lethargic or not feeling well or have a poor appetite. The good thing is, because of the way we treat chemotherapy in animals, and again, the whole principle behind how we do to keep their quality of life is the most important factor, 85% of the dogs and cats have minimal to no side effects. So they actually do remarkably well, even though we're using the same drugs that we use in humans. That does leave 15%, give or take, these are very rough statistics, that will develop more moderate to severe side effects. But rarely is it anything that's so severe that we either have to stop therapy or it's something that could even, you know, in the worst case scenario, be life-threatening. That's just something we often don't see because we are treating much less aggressively than in human medicine.
So can you talk about recovery rates then for certain common cancers?
Mm-hmm. One of the most common cancers that we see and we treat is lymphoma. Now, lymphoma in the dog usually presents as enlarged lymph nodes. It's very similar to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in people. Lymphoma without treatment can be a very devastating cancer with survival times in the range of 1 to 2 months without therapy. In contrast, if we treat with chemotherapy, 90% of the animals will go into remission. If we get a full and complete remission, the average survival time is going to actually extend to 1 to 2 years. Mm. Now, that may mean that they have to go through chemotherapy 1, 2, or even 3 times. And the chemo can last anywhere between 4 and 6 months, not every day. Sometimes it's on a weekly or biweekly basis, meaning every other week. So in that case where you can go from 1 to 2 months to 1 to 2 years, really good statistics as far as that goes. And we see about 20% of the patients go longer than 2 years. Cats are a little bit different. Cats also are prone to developing lymphoma, most commonly in their GI tract. They develop intestinal cancer. Cats are bigger groomers than dogs are, so they usually ingest these carcinogens, mm-hmm. which is one of the theories and even answers one of your questions about, you know, developing cancer. So they develop intestinal lymphoma. So their response rates are tend to be a little bit lower than the 90% mark that we see, and the survival times can be shorter. But it certainly is going to be much better than the 1 to 2 months that we can see even in that species without treatment.
Without treatment in general, 1 to 2 months. I guess it depends
Correct.
On the cancer.
That would be for lymphoma. Other cancers, it could be still 6 months without treatment. Some cancers, it's not so much in terms of being able to look and say, here's the survival time that we're dealing with. If you have bone cancer, for instance, osteosarcoma, another common cancer we see in large breed dogs, it's the survival time is really going to be limited by the patient's quality of life and how they are affected by the cancer and how they feel. So it's not so much that we can look and say, okay, it's going to be 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or 12 months. It's when it starts to affect the patient and we have to make a decision to help them.
Our guest is Dr. Joshua Lakowitz, veterinary oncologist with Blue Pearl Veterinary Partners. The website is bluepearlvet.com, and the charitable website is joshualewis.org, L-O-U-I-S. You're listening to Get Connected. I'm Nina Del Rio, and this is 106.7 Light FM. You mentioned cats. Cats get leukemia through a virus.
They can.
Are humans do not, of course. Are there any other animal cancers that are communicable?
There are. Well, and I should clarify that statement. The virus itself is communicable, but the cancer is not.
Ah, okay.
So actually, if you transmit the virus, you may be more prone to developing lymphoma or leukemia, but it does not mean that you can actually transmit the cancer itself. The only type of tumor that's communicable, which we don't see in this area very frequently, is something called TVT, which stands for transmissible venereal tumor. So that's that fortunately is not something we see in our area very often, but that would be the only type of thing that's going to be more of a something that can be transmitted. Other types of things would be certain papillomaviruses, mm-hmm. similar to humans, where they can have that contagious type of condition as well too. But again, it's the viral undertone that's transmitted, not the cancer itself.
And the vaccine for leukemia, those things are very effective?
They are effective. So if you have an animal or a If you have a cat, they were adopted at a young age when they were a kitten and they tested negative for the feline leukemia and feline AIDS virus, you can actually continually vaccinate them, especially if they're indoors and outdoors. It's very important to make sure that they're up to date on their vaccines, and that can help prevent the spread of that virus.
For a leukemia vaccine for cats, they need to get the shot again at some point. Those do expire?
Correct. They do expire, so they should be boosted periodically, and it depends on what they're being vaccinated for. Leukemia virus is usually an annual vaccination. The rabies virus is going to be something where we actually vaccinate them usually every 3 years, just depending on the type of vaccine. I actually like the PureVax rabies vaccine for cats because it's less prone to causing tumors, which is one of the risk factors we do see. We can see vaccine-induced sarcomas in cats. So sometimes, depending on the risk of the exposure to certain contaminants or viruses in the environment, you may not need to vaccinate as frequently. So that's something that you should definitely discuss with your local veterinarian, because you may be able to test vaccine titers or antibody titers instead of the vaccine. So it's all about educating yourself and doing that with your local veterinarian so you know exactly what they need. So you're not over vaccinating and potentially causing more harm than good.
Mm. Animals, like people, you know, they slow down as they get older. They might sleep more or eat less. Mm-hmm. We can't always tell how they're feeling, of course. So how do we know when there's something else going on that might be more serious, that it might be indicative of cancer?
Well, and that can be a very challenging scenario for what you just stated, that these are older patients, and so they may not behave the same that they did when they were 2 years old or 4 years old. Anything out of the ordinary, anything that seems atypical for your animal, anything that seems out of the norm or the day-to-day, or something that is not getting better with time. Maybe they're having a day where they're not 100%, but if that doesn't resolve, anything along those lines, it should be addressed. You may not find anything, but there's really no harm in looking and investigating the cause. So if there are these subtle changes that are persistent, more than a day or two, they should be investigated. If there's something more obvious, they're limping. It could be something where they have a tumor in their bone, or if they're uncomfortable, it could be that they have leukemia and that affects bone and causes pain. It could be that they're vomiting or have diarrhea or have a cough, developed any type of respiratory condition or cancer, nasal discharge. Anything obvious and specific that's new and doesn't resolve, or something that's more vague and nonspecific that fails to improve after a day or two or a few days should be investigated.
Dr. Lakowitz, if a pet patient is not getting better, at what point do you counsel an owner that maybe it's time to end treatment?
That's a very difficult question to answer because it's such a personal question, and it's when we develop a bond, there's a bond that's going to develop between the doctor, the owner, and the patient, and you really need to have all three involved in the process. For some animals, it could be, you know, after they've gone through various types of therapy, and we find that the therapies, the cancer becomes refractory to treatment. So when the treatment risks start to outweigh the potential benefits, that's when we have that discussion. If they're failing to improve with the treatment, even if it's the standard of care, if we don't have a treatment that's likely to give them a good outcome, or the palliative therapies to control pain and discomfort don't work, those are the types of conversations, or that's the time when we start to have those conversations. So it really depends on the individual patient and depends on the owner as well, too.
In our last minute here, how is your dog doing, by the way, your Pekingese?
My dog is doing fantastic, knock on wood. He has beaten the odds because he is a stage 5 lymphoma that did not go into remission right away, but he did very well with his treatment and really had very few down days, if any. So we persisted, and he went into remission after about 6 weeks, which is very unusual. He actually just passed his 2-year mark. And that is, again, he's in that 20% of dogs where they can actually survive beyond 2 years. But with his condition and the type of cancer he had and the stage that he had, I wasn't even expecting to get 6 months when he didn't go into remission right away. So he has quadrupled the time with me, and it makes me happy because he's such a great dog to have around, and he makes people smile. And I'm very blessed to have him in my life, and I'm glad he's around to make other people happy a bit longer.
Our guest today has been Dr. Joshua Lakowitz, veterinary oncologist with Blue Pearl Veterinary Partners. Their website is bluepearlvet.com. You can find out more about their animal charity, Frankie's Friends, on their website, and about the Joshua Lewis Animal Cancer Foundation at joshualewis.org. Thanks for joining us today on Get Connected.
Thank you so much.
This has been Get Connected with Nina Del Rio on 106.7 Light FM. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of the station. If you missed any part of our show or want to share it, visit our website for downloads and podcasts at 1067lightfm.com. Thanks for listening.